Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSH Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSH Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of men, women, and children affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSH Society Radio. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. It's FSH Society Radio. Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining me here. Another month episode is here and upon us, and so glad that you can join me today. This is the FSH Society Radio Show, where we kind of gather together as FSHers, as I guess we like to coin that phrase, and caregivers and family members that are looking kind of for that support or place to go to kind of talk about this disease and everything, I guess, that has to relate to FSH muscular dystrophy and how we all kind of cope and deal. And this is that great place to kind of come and gather and talk. And we try to bring some great featured guests here. And today we hope we don't disappoint, because we have Dr. Carol Brinbaum is in, and she is a doctor that, she kind of handles, you know, the mental side of things, you know. In her dealings with psychology and helping people, she's had her mother as well has had it, and of course has passed away in 2011. So we'll talk about that. So she's just a really close knit connection, obviously, to FSH and its effects on people. And that to me has really been kind of big for me, you know, in dealing with it myself, as I've been diagnosed very recently. And I'm glad we can talk about this subject today and kind of bring that into the forefront of what we all deal with when it comes to the mental aspect, not just the physical, but the mental aspect of it. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can do that. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here in the studio is 949-270-5953. You can also reach us out at Twitter, FSH at FSHSociety.org. At FSH Society is the Twitter. The contact for email is FSH at FSHSociety.org. Sorry about that. And, of course, the website is FSHSociety.org. You can look that up. If you want to email me directly, you can do that. My email is recroomshow@gmail.com. If you just want to chat with me, you can find me on Facebook as well. I'm Tim Hollenbeck, so you can always search me on there. And I do enjoy Facebook for that reason, because it's a great connection tool, in my opinion, where we can kind of talk and kind of throw some questions out there. And to kind of gear things up for the show, I really kind of posed a couple questions when I thought about, you know, what are the things that seem to kind of weigh in my head, like almost what's worse or what do I deal with more? And I thought, I've only had to deal with this for a short period of time. There's so many others out there that have dealt with it longer, and in a more drastic, you know, physical state than myself. And I was curious to know what everybody's opinion was on these two questions. So I put them out there on Facebook. I'll share them with you right now. And the first question was, what is more difficult to handle, the physical or the mental issues FSHD brings? And then the second question was, what is the oddest thing, or maybe, I think some people said maybe not odd when they answered, but impolite, rude, you know, brash. That so out of those things, what is the oddest thing a person has said to you about having FSHD? And I put an example, so people kind of knew what I was coming from. It was after I was diagnosed, someone said to me, now that you know what it is that you have, aren't you kind of just making it worse than it really is? You know, now that you know what the ugly thing is, aren't you just kind of saying, well, yeah, you know, I have this, I'm kind of making it a bigger deal than it really has to be, you know? And that was very, well, insensitive to say the least, but, you know, it kind of hit home of what do people deal with on a daily basis when not just necessarily having FSHD, but let's face it, other things that slow them down, weigh them down. And for me at my job, when someone said that, and then of course we just had World FSHD Day, on June 20th. And I hope you all celebrated that, well, loosely termed, of course, but I guess advocated it and got the word out. I know I did at my place of employment. And I was motivated to do that because of this kind of person that made a comment like that to me, because I really wanted to be something that people knew I had and that other people have it and that you know what it is. And to me, it was extremely important to have something on that day. So I had my orange shirt on. I asked the company to back me up, which they did, having an orange day. And for us, you know, wearing jeans is a huge thing, you know, in the office for like a casual day that's not on a Friday. So for everybody that wore orange, they got to wear jeans and casual it up. And, of course, they were donating money to me, which was great, that I'm going to give over to the FSH Society, of course. And that was kind of the push. You know, about a month prior to that, we did a little, you know, summertime picnic type thing. And I had a nice baseball basket, Brewer, Milwaukee Brewer theme. That's where I'm from. So, you know, Brewer theme basket that I put up for people to buy tickets and then dump the tickets in there to try to win it. And every ticket costs so much, you know how it goes. And we donated some money with that as well. So I wanted to kind of wear it on my sleeve a little bit, let people know that I have this. But when I did that, I made sure that I let people know that it's not just FSHD for me, is what I think about. But it really opened my eyes to the other things people deal with, whatever your something is. So I titled an email and sent it to everybody at my work, and I had the help of our marketing team to kind of fluff it up, make it more reader friendly. I'm not much of a writer, and it was nice because that's what I titled it. You know, my story of something, or the story of something. Because in my opinion, we all have a something. If it's depression or anxiety, and maybe that is fed into of what we all have to deal with. But, you know, people have cancer. People have, you know, deaths in the family that they're dealing with, or breakups, you know. And maybe to some people, you do eventually, you know, come to grips with those things. But if it's cancer that you're fighting, or an illness that you're fighting, what ALS, you know, MS, and then for us, MD and FSHD, we all have a something. You know, I don't think there's too many people in this world that you can walk past and think that they're immune to not have a something, whatever that is. So I wanted to make it very clear to the people that I worked with that I'm not special in by any means, that I have this. And so, hey, look at me. Feel sorry for me. Of course not. But, or recognize me, and who cares what you have to deal with. I really wrapped it into why do I want to do this? Because I want it to be known, but I also want them to be comfortable that if they have a something, that they can be courageous and advocate for that and help raise money for it and help for a cause for that. And there's nothing wrong with it. You know, we all get on the Ice Bucket Challenge or the Red Nose Day, and those are great things. And FSHD has, you know, the orange smiles, which is fantastic. And, of course, I'm biased. Orange is my favorite color. So it all blends well for me. But those kind of social media things just helps feed into what we need here, right? We need this kind of support. We need this kind of people coming out and saying, I have this. This is my something. This is what I deal with. I ended up getting a very good, positive response. I was hoping for more, to tell you honestly. Maybe I'm just greedy, but the response I got was great, and it was very heartwarming. Because I'll tell you, it was a very difficult thing for me to write that letter, to kind of pour out how this has affected me physically, the pieces and parts, so to speak, of my body falling down. Not literally yet, but just kind of falling apart to some degree. I mean, I look at myself in like video where, you know, I coach baseball, and just to look at my shoulder posture and things like that, I can tell something's off, you know, even just looking at myself, and it makes me feel uncomfortable and the things I have to deal with. So that to me affects me mentally as well. And having to write that letter so all my coworkers could see, it was kind of difficult to do. Like I said, I was glad I had some help in getting those things out. But I hope that everybody has that platform. I hope everybody has that kind of comfort zone. And if you don't, I hope this show can offer that for you. I hope this is a place where you can use the chat room and the chat room in. You can go ahead and call us in. That number, 949-270-5953. When you get in that hold queue, all you got to do is hit the number 1 if you want to come on air. If not, I'm just going to leave you in there just to listen along. But if you want to have some, if you have something to say and you want to come on the show and be live, you can do that. I welcome you in, because, you know, tonight's guest, you know, she's hopefully going to be a good help to all out there. And I know she will, because I think there's some tough questions to be asked, and I think she's got the tough answers for us, because there's so much to deal with. And for me, the mental aspect of things has becoming the what ifs, you know, those things that has become really hard for me to deal with. And I'm always going to kind of tell you guys how I feel and what I'm dealing with, or maybe there's an interesting story or tidbit I'm going to love to share with you month to month as we have these shows on air, because I'm going to tell you, I really want to be at the forefront, honest with you and transparent that, yeah, I deal with this too, and I want to share my story, but more importantly to me, I want to hear yours. I really do. And I think that this platform offers that, and I'm glad it does. You know, thanks to the FSH Society and Jun Kinoshita. She will be on the show later on, finishing up the show with us with news and events upcoming. And I'd also, it doesn't always have to be, you know, a downtrodden thing. You know, people think of like support group type things or shows even like this, you know, because there's others out there, other shows that relate to certain things like this, these tough subjects. It doesn't all have to be down. I mean, what did you do on World FSHD Day? You know, did you get the orange smile posted? Did you see some of them out there? I thought they were great. Heartfelt, awesome, you know, and always want to see them and see more of them. The ones I saw were great. You have a story like that or something maybe you did. Love to hear about that too. Oh, June is now in the chat room. Well, good evening, June. So she joins us now in the chat room. You can do that as well. And you just go to the, if you're listening through Blog Talk Radio right now, there's that chat room that you can enter in and you can type away there. And like I said, you don't have to leave your name even when you call in. You know, I'm going to answer your call based on the last, you know, four digits of your number, and we can go right from there. You know, you don't have to use your name if you want to stay anonymous. And if that makes you more comfortable, we can do that for you as well. So why don't we take, I'm looking at the clock here, and we're going to take our first break because then our guest is coming up in about 3 minutes. So why don't we go ahead and do that? Let's take our first break. You're listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.
FSHD is one of the most common forms of muscular dystrophy. It's a degenerative disease that weakens muscles in the face, shoulders, upper back, and legs. FSHD robs you of your smile and makes simple tasks nearly impossible to perform. FSHD affects hundreds of thousands of people, but most have never met another patient. Many have not even been diagnosed. Someone you know may be living with FSHD. Let them know they are not alone and that we're making real advances toward a treatment. You can help by going to our website, fshsociety.org/cureFSHD, and share the photos and facts about the disease using the hashtag CureFSHD. By simply raising awareness, you could change someone's life and help us get closer to a cure.
Welcome back to the show, FSH Society Radio. Thanks for being here on another Wednesday night. Happy to have you all aboard and listening along with us. We have a great guest scheduled for tonight, and that is Dr. Carol Brinbaum. She's going to come on and talk a little bit about FSHD and kind of how does it affect you mentally? Depression, carrying that weight of the what-ifs with you all around is kind of how I see it. So we're gonna talk to her today. So I'm really looking forward to this guest because this is, to me, the part that seems to bother me the most. It really is, because I'm more of a thinker, worrier type guy by nature, which isn't, I know, not healthy. And in this current situation that I find myself in dealing with FSH, it is kind of one of those things where it is awful difficult, you know, to kind of keep those things at bay. For the most part, because I guess I have to try to live in the moment, and that seems to be the best advice I've gotten from people that are trying to give me their best advice, because they can't totally relate to the situation, you know, but they do their best, you know, they do their best. And it looks like we have our featured guest just dialing in now, so let's bring her in. We have our guest tonight is Carol Brinbaum. She's an MD, psychiatrist, has a private practice in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and we welcome her here on the FSH Society Radio. Hello, Carol. Welcome.
Hi, Tim.
How are you doing today?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, yes, I can hear you fine.
Great. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Yeah, you know, and I do thank you for joining us, taking the time to bring your expertise to the show today, because I think this is an important part of FSHD, or dealing with it, I guess, is I think a part that I didn't really think about too much until it was, until it was kind of well down the road here for a couple of months, of the what ifs and the mental side of this whole thing. But before we get too far into that, I guess my first question for you is, tell us a little bit about your background and what you're bringing in for us today.
So I'm a psychiatrist in private practice in Cambridge, and my work isn't specifically with muscular dystrophy patients. I just have this family connection. I think that I came in a little late when you were explaining my background, but my mom had the disease, and after I lost her, I wanted to get more involved in fighting the disease, so I joined the board of the FSH Society, and I have been attending the last three Patient Connects meetings and working with people in the breakout groups, and it, you know, it occurred to me that there are lots of questions people have about how to deal with what feels sometimes unbearable. So even though I don't see a lot of FSHD patients in my private practice, I see a lot of people, as you were just describing in your intro, struggling with their something.
Right.
Whether
right.
it's a veteran coming back from the war, or somebody who's lost a loved one, or other. I see plenty of chronic illness in my, you know, among my patients. So.
Yeah, and that to me is kind of the whole point. Yeah, that I was trying to make to those coworkers that I was asking to at least educate themselves a little bit of what I was dealing with, but to let them know that I'm not necessarily finding myself like, oh, okay, I'm special. Look at me, and look at my cause is better than your cause or something like that. I realized very, very, very quickly that, man, there's a lot of people that deal with stuff, whatever that stuff or that something is, and it definitely sounds like you are a person that has helped people with a lot of those somethings. When it comes to I guess, you know, you said chronic illness and things, do you find that people are struggling nowadays more with the mental side of these things or the physical?
Well, the people that I see are definitely, you know, they come to me specifically because they're struggling with the mental side of things. And ultimately what most mental health workers are trying to do is help you move something that's felt unbearable into the category of being bearable, or, you know, maybe even comfortable or okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So whether that's a psychiatrist who's prescribing medication, or a psychotherapist who's doing talk therapy, or a pastor or religious counselor, or any of the other people who are involved in mental health work, that, you know, we all have that same goal to move things out of the unbearable category.
Because I know that, like I was saying, that for myself, I think it almost snuck up on me. I really was only concentrating in the beginning of, well, physically, what's happening and why is this happening and blah, blah, blah. And then once I kind of found that answer, and then you're kind of given this, well, this could be your road or not, or a degree of it or something of that nature. And then the what if started floating around, you know, what if I'm like this, or how much long do I have, and this and that. And
yeah.
I felt like this road I thought I had, because I'm 41 now. So I thought, well, you know, before this, I thought I got this amount of time, and when I retire, I'm going to play, you know, golf with my wife and this and this and this. And I felt like right after I was given that news and I let it absorb into my brain for a little while, it felt like that road got awful short. Is that something that you feel is common for those out there dealing with things like this?
Yeah. You know, one of the things when you first get the diagnosis, you're going to vacillate between feeling like you want to fight it,
mm-hmm.
and grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And grieving just the reality that it is, right? So,
right.
I think when you were talking about work, and you were saying everybody has a something, there's something very healing, I think, about you're putting your something right out there, because people can kind of, as they start to share their own stories with you, you realize that there's like a grief club, right?
Yeah,
that you're part of a community and that can help you. I think the Patient Connects meetings really operate in both of those tracks too, because your first Patient Connects meeting will feel a little overwhelmed when they see many people who are in worse shape than they are. Right. And they feel like, oh, this is overwhelming. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be this bad off. I don't. And then after a while, they settle in and they meet all the fabulous people and join this sense of community and hear everybody else's story and realize that they've found ways to make peace with this, and actually feel like they're having a rich and full life. So those Patient Connects meetings are really interesting in that way, I think.
Yeah, I have not attended one yet myself, but it's something I definitely want to do, and because of those reasons. I feel like I hear that a lot. And even within the, you know, Facebook, thank God for that part of it, the social media side of it, you know, develop some type of community at least, you know, where, you know, I'll pose some questions, especially if it has to relate to the show or something, to kind of get the juices flowing and people knowing what we're going to talk about. But it's also, I'm trying to, you know, engage people into a discussion and then hopefully be, you know, transparent to some degree about their feelings and this and that. And then hence, of course, it just, maybe it taps into somebody else going, man, I've been thinking like that for a while. It's good to know I'm not alone in those thoughts. You know, so I do 100% agree. Yeah, that sense of community is a huge help. Now, how do you help people decide? I don't know. Maybe decide is the wrong word. Maybe decipher. You know, between having depression and having, you know, just a blue or an off day in their minds.
So depression is something that implies a certain duration, which is generally 2 weeks or more, and of feeling down or blue most of the day, every day during those 2 weeks. And it also, I mean, if we're talking about what we call major depressive disorder, it also implies a certain amount of disability. You might have a disturbance in sleep, inability to take pleasure in things, ruminations, guilty ruminations, low energy, poor concentration, a disturbance of appetite in one direction or the other. And of primary concern are sometimes thoughts about suicide or feeling that life's not worth living anymore, I'd be better off dead. Mm-hmm. You know, if you endorse several of those items that I just listed off, and this has been going on for a couple of weeks, then it's important to try and get some professional help.
How about when we were talking about those things, and you're right, how they stretch and last for weeks. Let's say the person, though, that's dealing with it is maybe in a state of denial of it or doesn't really recognize it because they're kind of lost in that. How about the caregivers or the family members that are right alongside with them day to day, and if they start noticing those things, you know, what are some of the tools that they can do or find to get help for that person, including if that person gives them some resistance in getting that help?
Yeah, well, that's tricky if the person doesn't want to get help.
Right.
You know, the joke, right? How many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Just one, but the light bulb has to be really sure it wants to be changed. it's difficult, but sometimes it's possible to begin. You know, if somebody's suicidal, you need to call in outside help. And if your loved one is resistant and doesn't want to see a psychiatrist, you should at least begin with the primary care doctor. If they're acutely suicidal, obviously you have to call an ambulance. But if that is not the case, if you're dealing with somebody who's depressed and doesn't want help, sometimes beginning with a non-medical person, you know, a pastor, a yoga teacher, maybe somebody even in, you know, somebody else in the community can help to get that person a little more engaged and maybe even help direct them towards getting some professional help eventually.
And I think, and I do believe that the common fear sometimes with trying to go get that help for depression, where because I've been you know, had close relationships with people that have been depressed, and it seems like the common thread there between those people has always been, you know, I was scared to say something because I didn't want to be just drugged up, you know, I didn't want to be just only medicated.
Yeah.
and this and that. What are other treatment options out there besides just here's a pill to kind of, you know, change that chemically in you?
Well, there's all different kinds of psychotherapy. So depending on what the issue is, there's cognitive and behavioral therapy, which in which a trained therapist will work with either helping you find your negative thought and replacing it with something more positive. That's the cognitive therapy piece. Behavioral therapy might be to notice your patterns. You know, every time I get sad, I pick up a pint of Ben and Jerry's. So they might help you replace the behavior that's getting you in trouble. It's often exercise-based, homework-based. That's different than a sort of more traditional psychodynamic psychotherapy where you're talking more generally about relationships in your life. There, as I said, is pastoral counseling, which has a more spiritual bent. There's mindfulness-based therapy these days, which is I really like a lot, which has a sort of more Eastern emphasis on mindfulness practice like meditation and things like yoga, tai chi, qigong. All of those things can be very helpful in terms of lifting your mood. There's acupuncture, which some people find is helpful. There are things that don't involve talking, art therapy, sometimes.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say sometimes the creative process of painting or sculpture, things like that are another avenue where you can express yourself, and in the creative act you can feel a sense of healing.
Yeah, I totally understand that, because I think that's part of why I'm doing even this. This has always been a hobby, to do this kind of, you know, podcasting, talk radio stuff. Did it for like 7+ years and then kind of drifted away, unbeknownst to me, because I do believe in a spiritual aspect of things, even though sometimes it's tough for me to engage in that when I'm not feeling so great. But I believe that things happen for a reason to some degree. And, you know, my one show was going on for 7+ years and it kind of faded off, and I didn't really know why it wasn't, you know, catching on. I thought, well, you know, other things in my life were happening where I didn't have the time, so kind of let it drift. And unbeknownst to me, I think on the back end, it's because it was getting ready for me to be clear for this and to have time for this. And I see that now. Then I didn't. I was more frustrated why it wasn't working out. But it's hard to kind of keep that compass pointed that way. Do you find that doing multiple things then, you know, if it's yoga, also like the spiritual thing, for some people might be talking with their pastor, is it best to kind of get a collective front like that, work multiple things at once to kind of lift you, or maybe even help you stay out of those depressional funks?
Well, I like to take what I call the full court press, and
I like to
encourage people to try as many things as they think would be helpful. But, you know, for some people, they may just find the one thing that really makes them feel better, and they want to pour themselves into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't like to be too prescriptive. I'll throw a lot of things at a patient and say, if one of these things doesn't appeal to you, you have to really let me know.
Mm-hmm. So it's okay to test the waters a little bit on one or two things and kind of find what works best for them.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a good plan. Tell us also a little bit about you mentioned Chai Gong. I have not heard of that. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that process is?
So I don't know that much about Qigong, but it has to do with the balancing your qi. I think it's an exercise that involves it's sort of like Tai Chi, but slow, fluid movements that are. It's a Chinese-based practice that helps you feel peaceful and centered and balance the different forces inside. So, and it's not a martial art the way Tai Chi actually. Tai Chi is actually a self-defense practice as well.
Mm.
I think Qigong is more of a health-based practice.
Fascinating.
I think practitioners of Tai Chi would say that it is also a health-based practice, but it's designed also for... This is not my area of expertise.
Well, you know a little more than I do. I'll tell you that right now. So you educated me at least a little. Believe me, when this is done, I'll probably be Googling that to kind of learn more about it. Because my brother is a social worker in Illinois, and so he's done similar to your line of work of healing people, helping people. And he's really big on what you're talking about, as in those other natural or alternative ways to gain peace or dealing with your something. So I don't want to pop pills, granted, because I'm not big on that either, but sometimes it's tough for me to get out of my stubborn head and go, really, I'm just going to hum a little or do something like this, it's going to help me. So for me, it's kind of tough to turn the cynical off sometimes and just kind of just let it happen and, try to receive the information in a healthy way, from people that are trying to help. How about activity, as in like exercise, for those that can do it? Of course, I know for FSHD patients that can be more difficult, depends on the degree that we're dealing with it. But like for me, I can still do some things. I can still walk. I can still run. I can, you know, I coach kids and this and that, and that, and that's therapy for me. Where does that fall in line too? Do you think that that's definitely on the list for those that can do it?
Mm-hmm. Anything that gets your heart rate up is good for mood. And it's good for anxiety as well, and not so much while your heart rate's up, but as it's coming back down, that's good for anxiety as well. But you can, you know, you have to find your edge, and exercise that you can do in a chair. You know, even if you can't walk, you might be able to do their little recumbent bike pedals that you can use while you're sitting in a chair.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of have to work on finding your own edge. But there are other things about exercise that are helpful besides just getting your heart rate up and being aware of your breathing, letting your breathing become, you know, settle into a more regular pattern. If you're going to be able to exercise out of doors, just being out of doors can lift your mood. You know, getting out of your head, it sounds like you're talking about when you're feeling very cynical or having cynical thoughts. And sometimes getting, you know, swimming or walking, or if you can run, anything that's rhythmic will eventually, you may find that you've stopped ruminating on whatever negative thoughts you were having.
Now, you mentioned anxiety, and I'll definitely say I'm more of the worrier type. And right now, if any of my family members are listening, they're nodding their head so violently that, you know, they're in total agreement. Because I'm an overthinker, need to plan it to some degree, and if something knocks the plan off, then, you know, that's not so great. So, but I know that, you know, there are differences. I don't know what they are, and I'm hoping that you can help us decipher between, you know, having a panic disorders and having first anxiety.
So panic disorder, there are panic attacks, and then there's panic disorder, and then there's general anxiety. So a panic attack is more overwhelming. It's, you usually have a sense of impending doom. You might have to get up and open the window or feel like you're going to have a heart attack. Most of us know what anxiety is because we probably feel it all the time, right?
Yeah, probably.
A panic disorder is when these panic attacks that I was describing happen with no clear precipitation. So, if I'm in an elevator and I get stuck and 10 minutes have passed and I end up with a panic attack, that's not panic disorder because there's a good reason for me to, you know, there's a precipitance. But with panic disorder, you start having sort of these random, unprecipitated panic attacks.
So it's something then that because you can't plan it or you don't see what triggers it, or can you? Like if you have a panic disorder where it just comes on, are you saying then there's no trigger at all beforehand?
Typically. I mean, people with panic disorder will also have panic attacks when there are triggers, and they may have a very, you know, easy set off trigger, but they tend to have them completely untriggered as well. And that's, you know, that's a tricky thing that oftentimes some medication is really helpful in with panic disorder. But the kind of anxiety that people feel who are struggling with muscular dystrophy or FSHD, it's typically precipitated, right? You're worried you're going to fall.
Right.
Or you're worried that you're not going to be able to do a particular thing, or it may be a more vague dread about mm-hmm. loss of function in the future, or worry, which is different from panic.
Yeah, I think you probably hit it on the head. I think yeah, for most, because when I posed this question on social media a week prior to this show coming on, the question was this: what is more difficult to handle, the physical or the mental issues FSHD brings? And when I looked at it, quite a few comments, 50 plus, and then there was replies off people's comments, giving advice for others and this and that. But when I went through every, comment, several times trying just to, I don't want to say study it, but I found that there was this, several consistent themes, the what ifs, a lot of people said mental over physical, or mostly it went hand in hand. Like you were saying, the physical causes mm-hmm. the mental issue to happen. People talked about feelings of denial or they were afraid. And also what I found very interesting, because I guess I didn't really think of it this way until people that have had this have said it, a state of feeling of mourning. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you've heard from people that deal with chronic illnesses, kind of almost mourning?
Yes, of course. And I think that the problem with, in FSHD is that you sort of feel like you've grieved one thing and then all of a sudden you can't do another thing, so it's a rolling grief.
Right. Absolutely. It's kind of something that just kind of keeps, rolling is probably the best. It's probably the best way to say it. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
you're right. You think you handle one issue. It's almost like spinning plates. Okay, I'm spinning the plate, and then all of a sudden one falls. I thought I had it all under control, to some degree, or they start falling around you. And I know I also wanted to hit on this question, too, was not just the patients, but also those that have, like the caregivers and the family members. How important is it for them to seek help to deal with, seeing this happening from their perspective to their loved ones?
I think it's very important. It's very important for them. It's important for the people they're trying to take care of. Oftentimes if you're the caregiver, you want to be a cheerleader. And it's hard to let your loved one grieve. You want to say it's gonna be okay. We're still gonna be able to travel. We're gonna get a special van, and we're gonna do this and this and this. And the person that they're trying to cheer up just wants to feel sad.
Right.
And it's hard to kind of be in the same place together at the same time sometimes. And I think that everyone who is struggling should get help. There was a parenting book that I had when my kids were little, and the most helpful line in the whole book was, I can't remember it, the very beginning or the very end, but the pediatrician said, "Never worry alone."
Mm.
And
wow. Yeah,
I think it's great advice for a new parent, but it's also great advice for all of the people in our lives. So if you're not on the same page as the person you're taking care of, sometimes it's good to talk to somebody else about it and really pour your heart out and get the support that you need so that you don't burn out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, because I think that sometimes that gets forgotten about. It's also the people that are, I say, in the trenches, with me. I'm always concerned about how my wife sees it, from her perspective. We have an ongoing mm-hmm. conversation about it. That's just how we do it. We're not going to grill each other a million questions at one sitting, but we'll slowly revisit the conversation as we go, or quick questions. Like, I think every once in a while I get the, how are you doing? You know, a little sore today, but I'm all right. You know, and so it's like almost like a check-in, and that's kind of how we do it. But I'm always very concerned. I want to make sure she's getting help too, because I know it is weighing on her. You know, what now is her life going to be like since it's tied with mine within this? So I know that that's difficult and sometimes forgotten about. I wanted to make sure I asked that question, because I know people are listening that are family members, caregivers, people that are, in, like I said, in the trenches with those that have either this disease or others, perhaps, and that they're looking for help. What's your best advice, though, for those that are, you know, seeking treatment? What's kind of, I guess, the first step? If someone's listening here, they're like, okay, I've listened to Carol. She's given me some great advice, but how do I go forward when this is over, when this show is over?
In terms of getting help?
Yeah, in terms of getting help. Yeah, or kind of recognizing, you know, maybe they are beyond blue. Maybe they are depressed. I know we talked a little bit about that, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to find help. But even more, I guess if there's such a thing, for me, I would be, since I already admitted I'm kind of a planner type person, is there anything that we can do for, like, preventative health against depression and these things? Maybe that's the course of action for some people. So I guess, yeah, I guess that's the question. What's the course of action?
Thing. So if there are people out there listening to this show, that's a great thing to do. Chat rooms, message boards, those are really good ways to stay connected, find out what other people are doing. As I said, I think that the Patient Connects meetings are fabulous. And one of the really neat things about attending a Patient Connects meeting also is that there are people in all different life stages. So, you know, you said you're in your 40s and you and your wife are sort of planning what your retirement's going to be like. At the Patient Connects meetings, we have teenagers who want to talk about dating and sex.
Mm-hmm.
We have
right.
young adults who want to talk about whether, you know, what's involved with having children when you have FSHD and how can I take care mm-hmm. of a little toddler when I'm struggling with this, or what do I do about genetics planning if I want to have a baby? We have patients who are in retirement now, and so you can sort of stratify and meet people who are in your same life stage. You can mix it up, and you know, if you're really worried about what it's going to be like when you're 70, you can go and talk to some people who are at that age. So I think that in terms of mental health issues, that as you settle in and come to enjoy the Patient Connects meeting, it can be hugely helpful. Mm-hmm. In terms of getting professional help, I think that asking around, word of mouth, is the best way to try and find someone who might be right for you. If you have a good relationship with your primary care doctor, you could ask for a referral to a therapist or psychiatrist. If you have friends or colleagues who you know have seen somebody, ask for a name. If the person, you know, somebody knows a good therapist, but for one reason or another, that person's not right for you, you still could, you know, I'll often spend some time with someone on the phone and try and help them. You know, I'll offer names of people who I think would be a good match. So it's usually word of mouth. In terms of trying these non-Western medicine type things, again, it's word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And I think that going to a place that does a lot of rehab work, in the city of Boston, there's Spalding Rehab. It's a great facility where there are psychiatrists and psychologists who work on staff who can give good referrals. and there may be, you know, finding a rehab center in your area and asking whether they can help make a referral.
I think that's something that's great advice for people to start. Again, I know it's good for me. I was jotting a lot of that down to kind of help out, and especially like the meeting groups. I mean, I think I'm more looking to, I think I loved what you said about, you know, if I'm wondering what it could be like down the line future wise for me, well, in these meeting groups, you can find someone that is, you know, older in their 70s perhaps, and then, and talk with them and say, here, these are my anxiety issues, or this is what I think about or worry about. And then at least somebody that you can relate to with it. And I think that's huge, something to relate with. I thank you very much, Carol, for joining us today and taking the time out to give your great advice and just helping guide people along the way a little bit here, I think is a huge help. And I thank you for your time.
Absolutely. I look forward to meeting you at the next Patient Connect.
I plan on making it. Thank you very much. I'll see you there.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
So that was Dr. Carol Brinbaum. She joined us tonight talking about not just the physical side, even though we found that on Facebook, you know, one kind of ties to the other in some cases. That's where a lot of people's comments were, where, yeah, you know, mental can be worse or even physical, but a lot of people were saying the physical, you know, reacts then to the mental. I can't do this and brings me down and so on. Normally we take a little quick break here, but honestly, what I really love to jump into on this episode right away is to some of the events and other things going on in news with Jun Kinoshita from the FSH Society. So we're going to bring Jun Kinoshita in right now if she's available to speak with us here, talk a little bit about what's going on in the FSH Society world and news and events and what's going on. Hello, Jun. How are you?
Hi, Tim. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Loud and clear.
Good.
Thanks for calling and joining us.
Well, good evening. It's great to be here tonight. And I do have a lot of news to share with everybody. So if you want to hold on to your hat, can I just jump in and share it? Because I'm so excited.
Absolutely.
So as you know, last week, June 20th, was World FSHD Day. And we just had a tremendous response worldwide to our campaign, the Orange Slice Selfie. So the idea behind this was that, you know, orange is the color. We needed something simple that people could splash all over social media and that would have some educational content, you know. And so the idea was to create a smile out of an orange slice, because FSHD can affect your smile, and it's to provoke a conversation. And we just had hundreds of orange slice selfies posted on social media. We had 100 people just at Acceleron Pharma who each posted a selfie.
Nice.
And made a big collage. It was amazing. We had people at baseball games and so on. We had, I don't know if you know, Debbie Ryan, she was a Disney star, and she posted
nice
selfie and encouraged everybody to support the day. So that was really terrific. And in Boston, we had a really wonderful occasion. We had there's a beautiful suspension bridge called the Zakin Bridge. It's a landmark in the city. And they lit it up in orange.
Oh,
in
that's awesome.
World FSHD Day on June 20th. And we were able to get a small group of patients and supporters, and actually Dr. Birnbaum was among them, on an ocean-going catamaran that was designed to be completely accessible. It has a lift, an elevator in it. It's all like, there are no steps. It's beautiful. And that was, when we got to sail in the harbor, in Boston Harbor, right during the Tall Ships Festival. So that was incredible. And that was made possible to us by an organization that I really want to give a shout out to, called Shake a Leg of Miami. And that's a nonprofit founded by a gentleman named Harry Horgan, whose mission in life is to make boating accessible to anyone, regardless of ability or disability. And he is a paraplegic himself. He was injured. He had a spinal cord injury when he was younger. And he just loved the sea and made it his mission. And it's a wonderful community for the FSHD folks to get involved with, because it's really about also advocacy, about living fully, about realizing, you know, there are no barriers. Just, you know, we just have to design our world to get rid of those barriers. So that's a wonderful organization. We also in Maryland, Governor of Maryland proclaimed June 20th FSHD Awareness Day. And
fantastic.
I think many of people were following Team FSHD Cycling, and you had George Pollock, the captain of the team, on the show a couple months ago. And I'm very happy to report they arrived safely. Mm-hmm. They started on July 17th in Oceanside, California, and rode across the country right through that heat wave in the Southwest. Thunderstorms in Kansas. That slowed them down a bit, but they made it to Annapolis, Maryland last Saturday late at night, safely, all eight of them. It was an amazing feat, and we were so proud of them. And they also reached their fundraising goal. They wanted to raise $101,000, and they made it. And we had on both ends of the country, we had a kickoff party hosted by Amy Beckier in Oceanside. And in Annapolis, we had a group of folks, a group chaired by Frank Kolakowski, who's on our board, and Missy Cassidy, who lives in Annapolis. I mean, just wonderful people who came out to show their appreciation for this amazing effort. So this was all wonderful. It's just, and I think, you know, people listening out there, there's something out there for you to get involved with. It's such a rewarding thing to do. It really is. And speaking of which, we have patient meetings coming up. So this is a great way to connect with people in your community who are dealing with FSHD and their family members. You have so much to learn from them. So July 13th, on Thursday, July 13th, 7 to 9 p.m. in Boston, is a fundraising event called Lexi's Charity Bartending at McGreevy's. And Lexi is Lexi Pappas, and she just posted an amazing documentary about her family with FSHD. It's on our website. So it's that Lexi, and she's doing a little event. If you're in Boston on July 13th, go to McGreevy's, and she's collecting tips and donating all her tips to the society. On Saturday, July 15th, we have a doubleheader in San Francisco. In the afternoon, we have our FSHD Family Day Conference with speakers including Dr. John Day from Stanford and Peter Jones, who's one of the top basic researchers in FSHD. We have a respiratory specialist, a physical therapist, and we hope to also have a researcher from UC Davis, where they're running the Acceleron trial, and they're a leader in FSHD research. So that's all on the afternoon of July 15th in San Francisco. That's a free FSHD Family Day Conference. It's worth planning a trip there. And that evening, we have the fourth annual Songs in the Key of Stephen Blyer. So Stephen Blyer is a really, he's a hero of mine. He's got FSHD, very affected by it, but he's has not let that stop him from being one of the foremost musicians and a mentor to other young musicians. And that's a really special event. So those two events are happening on July 15th in San Francisco. We have a discount on hotels because San Francisco is expensive. So that discount's available only through this Friday. So you got to go on our website, find out how to get that discounted hotel, and come to our event on July 15th. July 22nd, Western Washington FSH community does its monthly Skype meetings. And on the same day, July 22nd, in Charlotte, North Carolina, it's their first FSH society meeting there, part of the North Carolina group. And a physician there who's running the Acceleron trial in Charlotte, North Carolina, will be speaking. So that's all coming up this in July. So I'll shut up there.
Well, it's great that you mentioned, too, about Stephen Blyer, because I know that we've been efforting to have him on for the August episode, and that looks like that will be lining up for that. So we're happy to have him on as a guest on this show in August. So that's great to hear, and then we'll have a lot to talk about with all that going on out there, because, you know, he is from the San Francisco area. Am I right on that?
No, he's not. Actually, he teaches at Juilliard.
Oh, he
but
does.
Every
okay.
summer he performs and teaches at summer festivals all over the country. Every summer he works with the San Francisco Opera. They have a program called the Mirola Program, which singers around the country, young singers audition. It's a very prestigious program, only the best get in, and Stephen is there to train them. And he has two wonderful young singers that you'll be hearing more about because they're going to become very famous, Amanda Lynn Bottoms and Dimitri Katatakis. So those two lovely young people are going to be singing with Stephen on July 15th at our event.
Perfect. That sounds great. Well, thanks, June. We appreciate you stopping in and giving us some news and notes. Yeah, I know they all get tired of hearing my voice after a while, so it's good to hear your pleasant sound as well.
You're very welcome. I love talking to our audience out there and sharing. We're doing so many things. It's such an exciting time. We just funded a slew of grants. I think we're gonna hit another record this year in what we fund in research. So,
all good
and
stuff.
Tim,
all
thank
good
you
stuff.
So much for doing this show. It's so important. It's such a great way to reach out to people everywhere.
I have a blast doing it. I'm really glad that you're able to give me that platform so I can get rid of some of this anxiety that I have. Believe me, this is part of my healing as well. So I'm very grateful for it, very, very much so. So thank you, June, for joining us, and we're looking forward to hearing more
you're
from
so
you
welcome.
Next week with news and events, or next month, I should say.
Okay. All right.
Take
until
care.
Next time. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. That was June Kinoshita. She is the CEO of the FSH Society. She was our first guest. If you listen back to the pilot episode on Blog Talk Radio and through FSHSociety.org is all linked through there. You can listen to that great show we had with June Kinoshita. Great to have her aboard. I'm glad that she's come on to kind of give the news and notes. She does such a better job of it than I ever had, you know, doing all those little added extra things that I want to make sure that you're all aware of out there. Well, it comes that time where we close up shop. I appreciate you all for listening, being part of the show. Send those emails if there's comments you want to share with me about this show or upcoming shows. Speaking of upcoming shows, as mentioned, Stephen Blyer is going to be hopefully our guest for the August show. Stay tuned for confirmation on that. Follow us on Twitter at FSH Society. Our website is FSHSociety.org, and our email address is FSH@FSHSociety.org. You can follow me personally on Facebook if you'd like. Tim Hollenbeck is me. Feel free to stalk me on there if you want. Add some comments. You can share about what you're dealing with and maybe your something that you deal with. Or send me those emails to me personally as well. Happy to receive those. RecRoomShow@gmail.com is my handle on that. And once again, thank you all for joining us. Thank you to our featured guest, Carol Brinbaum, for being here. Had a great time talking to her on a very important issues as us FSH people deal with this, patients, and also we cannot forget the people that are alongside us, our family and friends, helping us out. Talked about that as well. And also a final thank you to June Kinoshita for helping us with this show and bringing us the news and notes tonight. We look forward to talking more next month. You've been listening to the FSH Society Radio Show.